So, hi everybody. So after the break, I hope everybody's well rested for the first part of the morning. And today I'm gonna be presenting on pediatric procedures, when to do it and when to refer. And I just thought this was kind of like a representative of what happens in my clinic, and be prepared because this is really where we're at. So this is from South Park. So that's essentially what can happen, and be ready because that's what PEDS is all about. You're gonna have a lot of uncooperative patients, and you need to have an approach for that because they can be daunting. So that's why we said pediatric procedures, it's a special population, when to perform and when to refer. And all of us in this room are gonna have patients like Eric. So I didn't show you the whole episode. So Eric goes home and he doesn't want to have a shot. So, but mom said, you're gonna have that shot. So before the doctor's visit, he put on like moisturizer, coconut oil all over his body so that when they try to catch him, he's gonna slip out of everybody's grab and he's gonna escape the shot again. So your patients are gonna be very creative, and we need to be creative too because we need to get our procedures done even though it's a pediatric patient. But there are some circumstances, so that's what we're gonna go through. So before we go through everything, let's start with some pretest questions. So first one is factors leading to more satisfaction in clinic visit or procedure in a PEDS clinic are, except A, patient-provider relationship, B, providing age-appropriate toys in the clinic, C, sensitivity to the patient's needs, and D, cheerfulness of the practice. So these are the polls, and I guess you can go on the app and answer, get your answers so that we can see what it is at the end of the talk. So imagine there's music, letting you do the question, okay. So, okay, we'll move on to the second question. So the second one is, there are reasons to consider procedures in pediatric patients. These are the reasons, except A, there is a wide differential diagnosis and you want some guidance on how to proceed. In other words, you don't know what the hell it is, right? And B, you had tried some creams and the rash got worse and you have not determined cause of the rash yet. And C, the rash is persistent and won't go away and there are some worrisome history in the review of systems. And D, the parents want an asymptomatic lesion gone because the girl's classmate made a mean comment about it. So third one is reasons why you would refer out for procedures are A, the patient parents demand that you do a simple biopsy under general anesthesia because pain is not cool anymore and no one should suffer in 2023. And B, these are all real, by the way. B, the lesion in question is in a cosmetic zone, and parents want the absolutely best when it comes to scarring. And C, the patient's parents ask for a second opinion as they don't believe you. And D, A and B, E, B and C. Okay, so let's move on to the lecture itself. I have no disclosures to disclose. Just to remind you, a pediatric visit and procedure, it's a family affair. You just don't deal with the kid, you deal with the whole family. And you deal with the patient and their parents, and it's a short period of time, but sometimes you can kind of get to know the family dynamics. It's like mom, dad, sometimes grandma. Sometimes it's like, why are you all here in this room? So sometimes you may have to limit the number of people because that could eat away your visit, and it's very annoying. Sometimes people even have the neighbor come in. So it's very important for you to kind of set the limits. And mom and dad, great. But if there's grandparents and you're gonna be running late and they have a ton of questions, you're gonna set yourself up for failure and being late, and all the rest of your day is gonna be ruined. So it's very important for you guys to set the limits, know the family dynamics, and really limit it to mom and dad. And then there's the other thing, is like only mom comes, but she doesn't want to know what you have to explain. And then the other thing is, like, gets on my nerve is, can my husband call you later? Again, you say, this is your time. This, we are gonna discuss it. Even if I write it down on paper and summarize it to you, I am not going to talk to your husband about it. If he wanted to know about it, make another appointment. Because that, in my books, you can call me mean, is abuse. Because I'm setting up time for you, I'm ready for you, you should be ready for me too. So that goes for after visit, I have one more question you didn't address on my long ass list, okay? All right. So, yeah, it's all coming out now, right? So, so no after questions, and I forgot to ask this and ask that. So I think it's all about setting limits, and you need to know, I'm just not gonna take that, okay? Be prepared for your visit as I'm prepared for your visit. But you're gonna get that all the time. Everybody's gonna push you until you lose it. And I lose it a lot, right? So, but as you could see, I'm telling you what is needed. Some people even write papers about it, and there's a paper about it in PedSderm, and they say, really, factors leading to more satisfaction in clinic visit and procedure are really patient-provider relationship. This is a study. It's not my own experience, because they probably did the study because they got a lot of bad reviews like I did. A patient-provider relationship, cheerfulness of the practice, and sensitivity to the patient's needs. We're sensitive, but at the same time, we gotta set limits. So those are the three things. I mean, we cannot be also providing bad customer service where I'll be like Ihor and not enthusiastic about everything. You know, we need to have that patient-provider relationship where you kind of have to kind of ease it up and make comments about, oh, good morning, you know, little things, introduce yourself, and have kind of familiarity, because they are giving you their child to take care of, and so they need to feel comfortable with you. So again, the first thing is, you know, greeting, identify yourself, and if you have people with you, introduce themselves to what their roles are. And then also, they need to know who is doing the procedure. If you're doing the procedure, they need to have that trust in you. So talk to the patient at their level. And then, of course, you know, kind of ease up the whole thing, because they're anxious when they come to your clinic. A lot of kids say, hey, are you gonna give me a shot? And I go, I don't even know what you're here for. Why am I giving you a shot? But sometimes they're so rambunctious, I said, I may give you a shot if you don't shut up. No, I just want to sit. But, you know, it's just to the siblings I say that, but not to the patient. So talk to the patient, make some positive comments about, they love it. Parents love it when they, you make positive comments about their kids, that you actually notice their kids, right? Like chubby babies. I mean, you can't say this to adults, like, oh, you're so cute, you're chubby. You can't say that. But kids, I can get away with it, right? Oh, what a chubby kids. Look at those rolls that you could just squeeze. And then chubby legs, and look at all the folds underneath the neck. Oh, so cute. You can't say that to the adults though. There's an age limit, don't say that to, yeah. So babies, you could get away with it. You talk about eye color, how beautiful they are. And the moms, you could see them perk up. They're so proud of their kids. Oh, wow, look at that. He's going to be a football player. He's already running around, destroying the room. And then, yeah, they love to talk about their children. And then that's kind of fostering that relationship because you need to get their trust. Especially if you're going to be, the next thing you're going to say is we're going to do a procedure on your child. You need to set that standard first. Because you just go in cold, just like that doctor in South Park. I'm going to give you, it's just a prick, right? So, you know, the way, there are some languages that you cannot say in front of kids. Prick, needle, shot. Those are things that will make them run out of the room naked, just like Cartman did, and it's hard to get them back. So again, those are things that what are we doing to get better at it? So comments, even the toddlers, you know, they'll be wearing clothes, and Spider-Man is very common, you know, all of these toys, and you know, the girls, they would talk about, there was a time Frozen was so popular, and how many times did this girl sing to me that Frozen song? And then it's like out of tune all the time. And I'm like the American Idol judge, and I'm going, shut up already. Another Frozen song, I'm gonna go kill myself. But no, you just suck it up and say, you are gonna be the greatest singer later on. A little lie, not gonna hurt, right? So you talk about what they have. Look at the hair, the nails, all that stuff. And then keep up with the trends. You know, you really, they warm up to you, that you know what the hell you're talking about. You know who the names of the Frozen girls are. The little boys, they bring in their Pokemon toys, and I know the names of it, and they look at you and go, why does like an old lady know Pokemon toys? And I go, because I am 10 years old. And they believe me that I'm 10 years old. So they go, no, you look like you're 15. I take that any day. So Disney characters, the games, you know, and especially the little fat boys, you know, just to entertain myself, I make them do the Fortnite dance. It's just entertaining to me. It's just like, yeah, if I'm bored in the clinic, which I never am with the kids, right? So what are the common PEDS procedures? With the advent of biologics, we are the ones who's gonna be helping them with shots, you know? So I showed you that first video about shots. That's gonna be a common occurrence in our clinic, and they're getting younger and younger, and we need to show them how to do it. And then, of course, we gotta do biopsies, excisions, and an outpatient clinic is the best place to do it. And then wart treatment, curettage, application of medication. Like right now, you know, we have a new medication that we're just gonna be putting on the patients. But again, this is a different population. They're gonna be wiggly. It's hard to put them. You're gonna miss a spot. And then, you know, those are procedures we need to be comfortable with, and we need to be patient with these kids because it's a special population. And then when to do a procedure. Straightforward reasons, you know, it's been bleeding, like pyogenic granuloma, lesions that are suspicious, causing a lot of anxiety, cannot wait for observation, that is, it has changed already from the history, kind of very, you know, worrisome history. Sometimes doing that procedure, even though there's a high chance it's gonna be benign, you really have given them an answer. Big warts that won't respond to treatment, multiple lesions, now we could do those topical painless lesions, persistent lesions that won't respond to therapy. So those are the things that we are doing, and we have to make that decision. We're gonna do those. And then, of course, as we said, we're gonna be doing a lot of shots now. And when to do a procedure, we don't know what the hell's going on. Even at my stage, you know, rashes in kids are very challenging. And they're there looking at you, looking for an answer, because in their minds, all we do is look and we already know the answer. That's what's supposed to be. So this is a magic hat. I know just by looking what you have, and I only have one answer. But that's not true. Uncommon rash and the things that are not common, you don't see on a daily basis. It doesn't have all the qualifications for like AD, psoriasis, things that you see commonly, that's not common. Worrisome, and you don't want to miss anything serious, such as malignancies. You know, I picked up a few histiocytosis X because that diaper rash just looks weird, and the diaper rash just won't go away with standard diaper treatment. And rule out autoimmune conditions which needs further investigation, and you're part of the investigation. Things like dermatomyositis, morphia, lupus, that needs to have serious medications instituted. So you know at the end of the day, this is what they're gonna get, and I am gonna be part of that investigation, not just blood tests. I need to kind of push up that diagnosis. Chronic rash that will not go away with treatment and comes back. Again, I like, when there's chronicity, and you don't confirm that diagnosis, they're gonna bug you again and again and say, well, do you really know what you're doing? You know, I heard from, you know, I look at Google, I had a patient said, gave me a differential diagnosis. And I go, are you a doctor? Are you in dermatology? They said, no, I just Googled it and this is what it comes out. They couldn't even pronounce pityriasis rosea, and then they go, they start giving me the differential diagnosis, and they wanted me to tell them what the answer is based on their differential diagnosis. Be ready, because this is really the age of the internet, and before you know it, they won't even talk to you, they'll have ChatGPT talk to me, right? I've seen it all along, right? When you have a chronic things, such as even it looks like typical granuloma annulare. I want to confirm it. That way, they don't call you next month, 3 months, and they say, it's still there. Because I would say, I biopsied you, you got granuloma annulare. That's gonna take months or years, and it's still there. So I biopsied it, I confirm it. Case closed, okay? So that's what I do the biopsies for. And then also chronic, such as mastocytosis, it tells me it's gonna be there for a while. There are things that you need to avoid and you know, things that you need to carry around with EpiPen. Again, those are things I need to do with my patients. And then if they have a that you think is a common rash, just not responding to treatment. Things like, did I miss anything? You know, is it atopic dermatitis? They may have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but they're just not responding. And then you go up in your therapy, even up to biologic, they're not responding. You gotta say, did I miss something? Is this dermatitis herpetiformis? The problem is they're seeing you one point in time, you're at a disadvantage, and sometimes they go to the ER, they give them prednisone, and they come to you with like a kind of half-ass appearance, and they want you to figure it out. One point in time, being partially treated, and you need to know what's going on. So those are the things that you make that judgment and you need to do to kind of move forward. Because after all, they paid you copay, and they need to make a lot out of it, right? So again, as I said, everybody's fearful, including babies, and you need to know the stages of the development. Like a 10-month-old baby, you look at them, you put them on the kind of crunchy paper on the table, they get reminded, the last time I heard that noise, I had a shot on my thigh. So the moment you put them on the table, they scream their head off. They don't want you to even look at them. So know that development, and then kind of I know what word they're coming from. And also don't put that glove on like this, you know. And they really see that, and that really terrifies kids. And they always assume. If they're not asking you, you know what they're thinking. Are you gonna give me a shot, or are you doing a procedure? And then the other things is examine babies on parents' laps, and that way they're at your eye level, they're comfortable, and you're not pushing them on the sterile exam table. And then also, you know, you sometimes have to put on gloves, but you know, let them touch your glove. You have a scope, you're looking at with them, let them look through it. And they say, oh, here's a light. They're like cats, you know? Then you move around the light and they follow the light. And if they're following the light, they're not gonna scream and cry. And as I said, if you're gonna be doing procedure, they're 100% listening to you. So they are listening to every word. Every word you say can have a potential scary thing for them. So little pinch. I'm just gonna touch you gently. But sometimes too, it's just talking to the kids, you're also talking to the parents, because sometimes it is amazing that parents do not understand what a procedure like a biopsy is, because they say, are you just gonna scratch it? No, we're doing a biopsy. But I wanna clarify it to an adult, but sometimes the adults don't understand. So general rule, just kinda assume they don't understand. You just have to start again what the procedure is with friendly language. So it's important, no words such as shots, prick, and needle. And include the child in that conversation, but just try to say, we are gonna be using friendly words to the parent, because one time I had a parent, who I think she's like a insulin rep, and she went to the child and she said, you know what, you know how I sell these needles? And I just like jab it into you, and then I already left the room to prepare for the procedure. I came back, the whole room was destroyed, and the little child was trapped in under the chair and won't come out. So what do we do, right? So that's really, it ended up with that language. So at the same time, you have to let them know you're doing a procedure, but don't lie, because they're gonna ask straight questions. Is it gonna hurt? So you just kinda say, well, you know, you're gonna feel something. You're gonna feel pressure, like I'm pushing you, like this, like that, you know? But you didn't lie. You just said you're gonna feel something. So, and set expectations, especially to the parent, because they also don't understand the procedure, the lingo. I have a parent say, I want you to do an autopsy on my child. I go, don't you have to be dead to get an autopsy? But you know, language, we're coming from different places, so I'm just gonna say, well, let me just get you back and say the word is, right? So again, might feel like a pinch, show an example, and then some children who I did this for actually say it's like a warm feeling, you know? And they understand expectation. And then when you're doing it, do it very slow. And when you're pushing in that lidocaine that burns like hell, do it really slow. These days, I can't get my hands on bicarb, right? Much, you know, lidocaine too. So, and when you're, they don't really care about that shot going in. They don't scream with that. They scream when you're pushing in that liquid. So when you're pushing in that biologic, and the syringe seems to help these kids a lot more because you're under control. You, when you do it slowly and you don't let them look at it, very slow. That's how it goes. Because if you're tempted to go fast because they want to scream, but you just want to say, let's calm down, let's do it slowly. Breathe in, breathe out. And then when they are doing a good job, they love it that you are praising them. You say, listen, you're such a good kid. I've never seen a kid like this before. You must be so brave. Oh, like they just perk up and they go, I must be great. So that encouragement helps them too. Of course, you know, sometimes they, oh, we're doing a procedure, and then the mom freaks out and she tries to call the dad who's probably in a meeting, and they go, oh, what do I do now? I'm so helpless, I need my husband here, but he's not here yet. Can you wait? And then they cannot come to the clinic. You know, it just, again, delays your clinic. So I go, why don't we give you a prescription for Emla, which doesn't help, in my opinion, but hey, it delays things. It separates the evaluation from the procedure, so go with it. And then I tell them, let's do this and come back. So except for newborns, you know, that's a reported methemoglobinemia, but we hardly see newborns anyway, newborn. So they're gonna ask you for conscious sedation. So I don't do that in my clinic. I don't want any kind of accidents where they stop breathing. Nitrous oxide, you know, they did it in my dentist's office. It's just the price and the expense, it's just not worth it. Because to tell you the truth, what we do is very simple. It's just a matter of trying to kind of communicate. Because you either make it an episode that as bad as that experience with Cartman, who hates shots, or we could actually manipulate this in our clinic and show, do it the right way. So the other thing is your kid, 7-year-old, 9-year-old, I want to see your tray. I want to see how big your needle is. It's always like a guy, a boy, and who wants to see everything. And then the other thing that they would say is like, wait, I'm not ready. Wait for 5 minutes. What's going to happen in 5 minutes? Right? I don't know why you want me to wait. I'm already late in clinic. You either wait, not wait, or I'm, like that doctor said, reschedule him, okay? So because that's really where we're at. Set the limits, have the parent make that decision, not that child who said, I'm not gonna do it because I told you I'm not gonna do it. Who is the parent here? So again, hide your wife, hide your children, hide your needles, okay? So that's what you're gonna do, okay? And prepare it outside the room, and then that's when you're gonna be doing it, use the parents. Use them to show them home videos that they love, they know their children better, distraction techniques. Have the parents hold their kids. They love their parents holding their kids and with that distraction. It's all about distraction, right? So a lot of people say, you know, this was in Shark Tank, the Buzzy Bee vibrator. I don't know, I think there are better uses for that, which we're gonna make it PG here, okay? Cold or heat, ethyl chloride, you know, I had a patient said, oh, we're gonna do this shot for Dupixent. I am well equipped, I work at the pediatrician's office, and I am ready with my ethyl chloride freezer. I said, okay, let's do an experiment. One arm, we're gonna do, it's a loading dose, one arm we're gonna do it with your ethyl chloride, and then the other arm, we're just gonna do it, just not nothing. And then, of course, I did that slow go with the syringe. And then so we did a test, guess who won? No other shit that I have to do. Just to talk to her, do it slow, and we're doing it. Inject in the dermis, and very, very slowly, and withdraw slowly, especially with the lidocaine. And then with things like the biologics, I want to make sure it's not just room temperature. I want to make sure it's body temperature. So, you know, my girls, I put them in their armpits, and they kind of, it's like a chicken. You know, they need to get that warm body temperature before I inject it. And sometimes I pinch. They feel the pinch, and that's all they're feeling instead of the injection. So there are some tricks that you could do. And then the wraps. I like to use the wraps, very friendly. Use a cute wrap with things that they could see on the blanket, and they love it. And then skin to skin, I get the little baby go on top of the mom, and the mom hold the baby. That way, you only have one assistant helping you if you're doing it on the head and all that stuff. Then they're cuddling at the same time. So this is what I do with the wrap. I lay the child and on top of the wrap, and then I kind of fold it underneath the baby, and then it goes on the other side, and then you then grab at the other end, and then you're gonna go and do it with the other arm that is free, and then you wrap them around again. And then you see how that's wrapped around, and then you can just fold it. So when I'm doing that, of course, they're all gonna resist you again. They don't wanna lay on the blanket. So I just say, hey, we're gonna do a little game. I'm gonna wrap you, and I give you a choice. Do you wanna be wrapped like a burrito, or do you wanna wrap you like a spring roll? So far with my survey, they like burrito, okay? So kids in general like burritos, so not the spring roll. So, and then this is where if I'm doing something on the back, I have the mom hold the kid and secure the kid while they lay down on the table. So distraction techniques. The talk anesthesia is real. So you distract them. They like to talk about what they're doing in school, their favorite subject, sports, hobby, and where did you go on holiday? And then for the fat little kids, I go, what are you planning to eat after this? Oh, they have a lot to say, right? And then it's always ice cream after that, okay? Your favorite show, and then they go on, and then somehow you're finished already because as they're talking, it's fast, right? And then you're doing what you're doing, and then you go, excuse me, we're done. Okay, stop with your story already. So let's move on, right? So, and I get them to, when they're doing the procedure, I get some, like, pigs, chicken, stress balls. I like to get them from that Cracker Barrel. They have those toys that's easy to squeeze. Blowing bubbles sometimes helps. Their movies, they bring in their movies, their games, noise-canceling headphones. Some of them don't want to hear me. Sunglasses, books, Do kids still read books these days? Anyway, and in babies, we get them to use glucose water. And then breastfeeding. Breastfeeding is another issue. I had a 10-year-old that breastfed during a procedure. A 10-year-old. Okay, this is my rule. If you have fangs, you don't breastfeed anymore. Okay? That's my rule. But you know what? It helped my procedure. So I said, so be it. Everybody should breastfeed if I'm gonna do a procedure, okay? Whatever, that's, you know, everything easy. So again, have their iPads. Everybody has iPads. And this, the kids love this. They the dirtier the toy, the better. But not too dirty, okay? Yeah, we are PG here. We are PG, okay? The egg comes out, it's his butt, they laugh, right? Bubbles, they laugh, right? And then you have to be careful with post-procedure vasovagal response. Pale lips, you kind of look at the lips all the time. This is more of a teenager, 10 plus, who hold their breath, and the place to look at is their lips. So you're screwed if they have a big lipstick on and then you can't see, but they are really pale. And they start sweating, they got a little sweat on their upper lip. So those are the ones that you have to make sure they stay in the room, they do everything slowly because you don't want them fainting at checkout, hitting their heads, and before you know it, you're calling your lawyer. Because that's happened. So be ready, fan, ice water, orange juice. So a lot of these people, they go to your procedure, they didn't have breakfast, they get hypoglycemic, and then also family history. Oh yeah, her dad does that all the time. Thank you for telling me, by the way. Thank you very much. Yeah, right? So, and then post-procedure, I do liquid nitrogen and I freeze. And then after that, even before that, I say, you want a magic show? I'll show you magic show if you stay still. And then they actually, some of them say, no, I don't want you. And they cry the whole time. And then after the procedure, I throw it on the floor. That's a piece where it's like they don't cry for a short period of time. Again, stickers, high fives, praising them. As you could see, Cartman, even though he did not behave very well, he still say, I want my little prize, because that's what we do in America. We actually reward them for bad behavior, okay? So the other thing is wound care, and again, it's such an emotional time. It's drama, drama, drama. So you're trying to tell them, this is what you do after this post-procedure care. They are just seeing you going, wah, 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 wah. So make sure you have that written paper, because just to prevent you from having to answer that question again, like, you did not talk to us about wound care. So again, I tell them, take a picture of that wound care paper, especially divorced parents, because they say, I lost the paper. Oh, you didn't tell me anything. What did you tell my husband? So again, take a picture. Your staff, it's very important. They are your eyes and ears. They could actually, even before you see the patient, warn you. Patient in room one, weird as hell. Or a patient in room one can't even understand what their insurance is all about. So again, train them well and train them about, you know, setting expectations that you're using the same language as to the patients. And also, it's not just you who's kind of talking to the patient, they also talk to the patients and get the work done. Okay, so I like my big burly MAs, but big burly, but also gentle. So your positive attitude becomes your staff attitude, because your patients can sense that, because this is a lot of work doing procedures. So when you make the decision to do the procedure, you need the procedure. The next question is, when do you refer? So sometimes they just don't trust you, right? Why is a short little Asian woman telling me what to do, right? I don't care you got more than 25 years experience. I don't trust you because I saw that TikTok commercial and I trust that commercial better, right? Okay, yeah, so I can't convince everybody. This is the truth, right? So that's the time that you say, you and me, we are not gonna connect together mentally, right? So face and other cosmetic units, people have expectations, especially with the kids with scarring. They don't understand, you cut that skin, you're gonna have a scar. If they don't understand, they say, can I go to plastics? Yes, you can, because if you have a scar and they think you caused that scar because you didn't send them to plastic just because they told you, you're gonna be blamed for everything. So again, lesions or rash close to important structures, like close to the eyes, you know, one false move, you poke the eye, That's why your staff is very important, because they have to know how to hold the child. You don't want the staff with these long-ass nails, right? And their whole, so when I am gonna interview somebody and they, I said, I look at that and they, can you hold the kid down? And they use their nails to kind of hold the kid, and the kid has all those marks from their long ass nails, right? I can say ass in this meeting because you're all cool, right? So, and then, you know, and they don't want to break their nails, so they're not very, you know, they're not gonna put up. So that's why your staff matters, right? Close to important structures. And again, scars, despite explanation. And patients who just like don't understand why you're doing the procedure. And they don't agree with you, they argue with you. It's time for a second opinion. And also, we have parents, I've been called to court because I wanted to do a ward treatment. One parent said no, the other parent says yes, and then before you know it, they say, you're gonna appear in court. Hell no, at $1,000 up for 15 minutes, yes, I will appear in court. And they suddenly they say, you're not needed anymore. Okay, I wonder why. Okay, so out of control kids, filled with anxiety, Cartman. If I have a patient like Cartman, yeah, instant referral, yeah, general anesthesia for you, buddy. And then also, there are evil kids out there. I've met them. They look at you and they wanna hurt me, okay? I wanna continue practicing, okay? And I don't want these little bastards hurting me. So you're an instant referral, okay? So if the parents too of these psychopath kids are start threatening you, I'm done with you. Out the door, okay? And that, don't let the door hit you on your way out. And then if you're not comfortable with the procedure, there's nothing wrong to refer. Until you get comfortable, that's why we said from the beginning, that relationship between you and the patient is very important. You got anxious parents, anxious kids, anxiety all over. Yeah, you don't need that drama. They can go somewhere else.
There you go.
So when to repair? I don't know why I went to pretest again. Okay, so I guess we are done, right? I had some, so just to remind you, there are some ancient things that are there that I inherited from my previous clinic. That's just that board where you have Velcro everywhere. You don't need an assistant with this. But I got a review saying that I'm practicing caveman dermatology because I put this kid on a papoose. It's called a papoose board. They use that in the ER because you don't want kids moving around. But that review kind of hurt me. That was the time I was still young and kind of snowflake then. And but now it's like, who cares, right? Let me do my job. So at that point, thank you very much.